This is listener-supported public radio, KBBI, Homer, AM 890. And that very dramatic music tells you that it is time for the regular Thursday COVID brief. The time is 9:03 a.m. And on the line, let's see who's present. Dorotha Ferraro from South Peninsula Hospital. Do you read me?
I do, Kathleen. Good morning.
Good morning and welcome back. How about Nurse Lauren Carroll from the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services? Good morning, Nurse Lauren.
Hey, Kathleen, you're loud and clear.
Awesome. And Jenny Carroll, Information Officer for the City of Homer. Good morning.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Okay, thanks everybody for being here. If you have questions for the panel or comments, then you can call 235-7721 or you can email to info@kbbi.org. And I want to start, we're going to get to the numbers and the statistics in just a minute, but I definitely want to start with Jenny Carroll, Information Officer for the City of Homer, because the emergency declaration for the city expired on Monday. Is that right? And that means that your role is going to change. We won't be hearing you live every week.
That's right. Yes. Actually, on June 29th, the city's emergency declaration expired. And what does that mean? Well, with the end of that declaration, the city will no longer be in active response mode to the pandemic. And so because of that, we've deactivated our emergency operations center. And for those of you who maybe are not familiar with how emergency response works, just a little bit of a primer so you understand when an emergency declaration is declared. The city established this emergency operations center, and we followed basically standard structure for emergency response, which is called our National Incident Management System. And that's where various teams or parties get together to manage an incident and to coordinate whatever kind of mitigation or relief activities need to happen. And so given that this particular incident is a public health emergency, our incident management team was made up of representatives from South Peninsula Hospital and the Public Health Nurse Office, or what we call it was managed under a unified command structure. So basically, with the end of the declaration, we're stepping down that emergency operations center where the city would organize these logistical and planning meetings, and various responders in the community would meet regularly to get a picture of the overall situation, anticipate needs, and to help people plan the steps forward. Certainly over time, as the pandemic has unfolded and response systems have been established in the community, the EOC has already begun gradually stepping down their activity. And at this point of the pandemic, under the current conditions anyway, many of the COVID response activities have somewhat become part of our routine operations, particularly in the city's planning, logistics, and the area that I've worked in is the communications section. So efforts in those areas will step back as well. The public information officer, me, I'll stay tuned and help support the ongoing efforts of our partners, particularly in the area of our ongoing vaccine efforts. But I won't really be tracking and following and helping to plan as much as I used to. Certainly, as conditions change in the pandemic in Homer on an as-needed basis and as available, the city is certainly approachable to continue or to come back to provide any kind of logistical support or information support that may be needed. But we're not, we're kind of disbanding that general overall operations management.
Thanks. That's Jenny Carroll, Information Officer for the City of Homer. Nurse Lauren Carroll from the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. Jenny mentioned that things would change considering if conditions change. So maybe we could talk a little bit about the current conditions in terms of case numbers of COVID, hospitalizations, and deaths over the last few months. And then also I want to bring Dorotha Ferraro into the conversation from South Peninsula Hospital as we shift to talk about vaccination numbers. But also, Nurse Lauren, can you start with orienting us on current case numbers?
Oh, yeah, sure thing. You know, here in the state of Alaska, during the week of June 20 through June 26, 228 cases were reported for Alaskans. So that's a 4.6 increase compared to the previous week. So that's a grand total for COVID up to today since it started of 68,284 cases. So the overall hospitalizations increased to about 1,606. That's a grand total with just one reported a hospitalization included from the last week. And those numbers tend to lag. So it's about a week behind. And one death was reported for that particular week. And then the grand total for deaths to date would be 367. And comparatively, that's really good news. And kind of the take home there, well, at least one of them, is that, you know, out of all of those, about 97% of all hospitalizations to date were from unvaccinated people.
So, Nurse Lauren, before I throw to Dorotha Ferraro from South Peninsula Hospital, can you tell me how many, if there are any deaths confirmed in the state of Alaska due to vaccination reactions?
That'd be zero in relation to vaccination, yeah.
Thank you. And also, can you talk a little bit about the VERS vaccine adverse event reporting system? I forwarded you an email from a listener about deaths reported due to vaccine through vaccine adverse event reporting system. Did you receive that?
Yeah, got it. You know, that's a great question.
Can you talk that's all right. Can you talk about what that VERS system does and how it can track? Can you respond to that?
Oh, sure. I'll give Thanks. You two responses. The first one, a short one, is that you should not access VERS information for answering the question of, you know, what side effects, what percentage of side effects occur due to vaccination. And that's because VERS is a surveillance system. It's not an epidemiologic system. So VAERS accepts reports of any adverse event following vaccination. So those reports of adverse events that are entered into VAERS, that's anything following vaccination, including deaths. But those deaths don't necessarily mean that the vaccination caused that health problem. It's kind of like looking for a needle in a haystack. So each death that is reported via VAERS is investigated. And in our country, the entire nation, including Alaska, what constitutes a death, it's the responsibility of the provider, and in some case, vital records, to determine causation of a death. But that being said, there are some serious adverse events of interest that are being followed in relation to the vaccine. And there's about four main ones. One would be anaphylaxis related to COVID vaccine. And so that's very rare, but we expect that to happen at a rate of about 2 to 5 people per million doses of vaccine administered here in the United States. And the second one is thrombosis with thrombocytopenia syndrome. So that's been followed very closely. And then another one is myocarditis and pericarditis after vaccination. That's incredibly rare, but we're following it very closely.
So that's a heart condition, right?
Yeah, you got it. And the CDC and its partners are investigating those reports to assess whether there is or not a relationship between COVID-19 vaccine and myocarditis, that heart issue. And then lastly, and directly to that question, is reports of death after COVID-19 vaccination are rare. But they're being followed in a review of that available clinical information, including things like death certificates, autopsies, and medical reports, is being looked at to establish a causal link from COVID vaccines to that ultimate outcome of death. And to date, there's been zero. However, recent reports indicate what we call a plausible causal relationship between the J&J vaccine and that rare and serious adverse event of blood clots, which has caused some deaths.
Thanks, Nurse Lauren. I appreciate you looking that over and giving a response. Dorotha Ferraro from South Peninsula Hospital, I didn't mean to leave you hanging for half the show, but I want to say welcome back. And can we talk a little bit about the way that South Peninsula Hospital is changing going forward? It was very interesting, your report to council on Monday, about how so much of what the hospital stepped up and took on a lot of responsibilities so that state public health could focus on other things. Can you talk a little bit about testing and positivity locally and about South Peninsula Hospital's response during the pandemic? And is that going to lessen or lighten up now? Is it time for that, for a change?
Thank you, Kathleen. Yeah. I appreciate the opportunity to explain all of that. Some of the hospital's response was certainly just based on need. One of the ways to see the impact of the pandemic in our community and hopefully mitigate the spread of the virus was testing. And because we have a lab here and because we had scaled down services, in the interest of closing unnecessary immediate medical services to help mitigate the spread of the virus in general as a community and as a nation. We had staff that were available to step in and start providing the services necessary specific to the pandemic. And we got everything ready to provide inpatient care, because that would be the most important role that we would play. But in the absence of needing that, had folks geared up to work and just shifted to the next obvious medical service that was needed, which was testing, and really built those systems around testing. And kind of as that just unfolded and funding became available through the CARES Act, as well as other COVID related sources, our finance department was able to reach out and get some of those funds. And we were able to maintain a very robust testing and then shifted to vaccine service for the community. Some of that really is a reflection of community-minded individuals that work here and their commitment to community. And we see that pre-pandemic through all of our partnerships, sponsorships, and collaborations that we're involved in. But it continued through the pandemic through working together under the umbrella of the Homers Unified Command. So really just it was kind of a perfect storm, if you will, of systems and attitudes and values that aligned to do that, as well as funding. That certainly didn't hurt either. Another advantage is that we're a locally owned organization. And we're locally owned by the borough and run by a local board of directors. And all of the decisions are made right in our zip code, if not right up the road in our borough's zip code. So that certainly helped give us the flexibility to respond the way we could and the way the community saw the need. So anyway, now that that's all through, an update as to where we are in emergency response. Our group, we have an internal hospital incident command system that responds to basically any emergency alert. We have different levels that we call a 1, 2, 3, or 4 based on the impact of what the event might be, whether it's an earthquake, whether tsunami, a pandemic. So we hovered throughout this at 2 or 3 and activated our infectious disease response plan. But based on the low transmission rate right now and the low risk level that's happening on the peninsula, especially the southern peninsula, much to do with the high vaccination rates, we are having our final incident command meeting on July 14th. And we expect, as long as case rates stay low and treatment remains available, and no conditions change significantly between now and the 14th, our goal at that meeting is to finalize all of our operationalized plans to just kind of, like Jenny said, that our COVID response is now just part of routine. So we know it's a health risk, we know it's a known disease in our nation and our state, and we have the systems in place to do that. And so our goal is that on the 14th, that will probably be our last day to have our incident command meetings and systems running. And it's now just all kind of part of our one more thing that is, you know, happening for the hospital. As far as hospitalizations go, there currently are 15 people statewide hospitalized for COVID. Here in Homer, there are none. We have not had a hospitalization recently, and in the last 3 months, we've only had 2 hospitalizations. As far as positivity rates on the Southern Peninsula, we've seen 6 positive cases identified in the last 2 weeks on the Southern Peninsula. And the testing site remains busy here on Bartlett Street because testing remains a great way to help mitigate the spread. And that's always been a priority for the peninsula, and especially the Southern Peninsula, and appreciate that. And testing is open daily, 9 to 6 right now. A lot of the testing staff down there are funded by the COVID funds, and so that will be a decision that we will make by the July 14th on how long that will last.
Okay.
But definitely for the foreseeable future, no issues whatsoever. We still have COVID funds available.
So, yeah, that was high on my list of questions. So the COVID care clinic will still remain 7 days a week for the moment, providing testing and vaccinations?
Yep. That's correct, yep.
And then we will stay tuned to hear from you as the decision is made as to how that will change. So what about, Nurse Lorne, I have a question in my email queue about the presence of the Delta variant in Alaska. How are you tracking it, and are you seeing the presence of the Delta variant in Alaska?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, that Delta variant first was identified in Alaska at the last of May. So May 30th, we first sequenced a specimen that popped up positive for that particular variant. So to date, we've identified 13 cases, and that's an increase of 9 from the previous reporting period. So just to kind of back up and give that a little side-to-side comparison with other variants. So back in December, we discovered the B117, and we've identified 345 of those cases so far. And then in regards to like the Gamma, the P1, we've identified 51 cases, and that's increased 8 since the last reporting period. So a couple take-homes about that is, yep, we expect the Delta variant to spread in Alaska in much the same way that the others have done. But also a very promising thing about the pandemic and the Delta variant is that those mRNA vaccines are proving to be very effective against Delta variant. However, there's one important take-home would be, if you haven't got that second dose of Moderna or Pfizer, it's incredibly important that you get it. Because with only one of those doses, you know, the efficacy or its ability to work is only about 30%. So getting that second dose is really important to pushing that efficacy up to the 80s and 90s.
Thanks. That's Nurse Lorne Carroll, public health nurse with the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services and the Homer Public Health Center. Nurse Lorne, are you changing in the way that you work now? Because, well, you know, it was surprising to me, but I'm ready for it, of course, to hear Chief Kirko and pretty much everyone at the meeting, the report to council on Monday, referring to the COVID pandemic in the past tense. And so I want to know how things are changing for you in the way that you do your work, Nurse Lorne.
Oh, I guess I would say a couple things, not to downplay our role or the hard and thoughtful work that the public health nurses and the office assistant has been doing here in Homer. But really, You know, we've got 8 different strategic priorities within the section of public health nursing, and about half of those focus on communicable diseases like COVID and tuberculosis, for example. But one of our strategic priorities is emergency preparedness. So this is something that we do every day based upon community needs. So, you know, our day-to-day activities will shift a little bit, but our focus will remain the same. So what I mean by that is, as our partners like the hospital may step out of operations like testing or giving COVID vaccines, then we'll pick that up if other partners can't. But we'll continue to keep an eye on other emergency preparedness threats like earthquakes, volcanoes, fires, et cetera, like business as usual.
Thanks so much. And Dorotha Ferrara from South Peninsula Hospital, I want to make sure, because I haven't spoken to you in a few weeks, I want to talk about, actually, Nurse Lauren, this is for you too. KBBI reported on a shift in the way that vaccination numbers were counted in Homer and Fritz Creek, which made, which changed the numbers. They don't change the numbers for numbers of people vaccinated on the peninsula, but it does change the numbers for people who are vaccinated in Homer and Fritz Creek. So Nurse Lauren or Dorotha, can either one of you speak to that?
Ooh, yeah. Maybe I'll take a first go and then Dorotha can back me up if you like. There's been a recent shift in how DHSS is counting vaccinations received by folks in the Homer area. And kind of the bottom line or take home there is that if you live in Homer, Fritz Creek, or Diamond Ridge, you've got an address probably that says Homer instead of listing the CDP or the census designated area. So I live in Fritz Creek, but my mailing address is Homer. So anytime I have communications, like all my COVID tests have had Homer, Alaska as my address. So things like that can oftentimes get counted in the denominator of the Homer area. So in order to clean that data, which is an ongoing process, that denominator of the Homer area now includes Homer CDP as well as Diamond Ridge census area and Fritz Creek. So as we continue to clean that data, those numbers recently, as they appear to be 79%, went down to 61% fully vaccinated.
Thanks so much. And I'm going to come back to Dorotha to give her the last word, but I want to go back to Jenny Carroll from the city of Homer. First of all, thank you so much for all the work you've done to help keep people informed over the last year and a half. I know that the final report to council from Incident Command is scheduled for the next meeting. I think that's July 26th. Will that report be submitted to council and available through all the paperwork that, like with the agenda items and the supplemental packet for the city council, will people be able to access it that way or any other way?
Well, we gave our final report at the last meeting.
Oh, I thought they said there was one more report to council on the 26th. There's no more incident command on the schedule?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, with the stepping down of our EOC. What we are hoping to do with all of our partners and internally for the city, and I think our other partners will probably do the same, is something called an after action review and report. And those are best done, you know, shortly after the event, and this has been a long event. We don't have that on the books scheduled at this point, but we are actively looking at when that might happen and what shape it'll take. And when that happens, there will be a report, but it won't be on the 26th. What will be happening on the 26th, though, is that our next council meeting will be in Cole's Chamber for in-person meeting, which is pretty exciting. The equipment we've been waiting for is now on site and being installed. And before, you had asked about, you know, ways that people can participate. So I checked in on that yesterday. And the goal is for the public to have different avenues to access the council, their council meetings. So in addition to the in-person, they are trying to set up to, they will be setting up for a live stream and also to allow continued Zoom attendance. As you guys know at KBBI, you record and present the council meetings over AM radio, that the technology in coordinating all that and not getting feedback and interference, all that kind of stuff, is a bit technically challenging.
It gets easier.
It gets easier, but it's our goal to have those hybrid meetings to allow people to Zoom in if needed, but also really a big emphasis on getting people back in there to be face-to-face and interacting with their leadership. So we're hoping to have Zoom attendance, but we'll stand by on one on that as we go through the technical trials and see how that all works.
Thanks so much. That's Jenny Carroll, Information Officer for the City of Homer. Now, because of the emergency declaration expiring and things changing, the contact phone number for the city will no longer be in operation. But, Dorotha, or do you have something else you want to add to that, Jenny? Go ahead.
I would, yeah. Just so what else changes? Like, I'm glad you mentioned that. It was on my list. Some of the services that we've provided under the emergency declaration will go away, so that the city's COVID call line is now not manned by anyone. The EOC PIO email that people send to, it still exists, but we will not be responding to questions. We'll be referring you other places. And we also had a vaccine line that's no longer active. We'll still be offering some information and links to various COVID-related resources as we learn about them and get news from our partners about what's happening locally. We will be helping to support that on our website and in whatever ways we can. And also, as we mentioned earlier, those regular unified command reports to city council meetings will end. I just want to respond to one other thing. You said that many of us had referred to the COVID event in the past tense. And I'd say what I would like to clarify is that certainly our active response to the pandemic under our emergency declaration is now in the past tense, but that doesn't mean COVID-19 is over, just our emergency response set up and setting up those systems that we all know and utilize now. That is here. It'll be here with us for a while. So please, everyone, just because the emergency declaration has expired, really what that means is that information is out there and systems are set up for us to protect ourselves from bad fallout from this pandemic, as we see in other places around the world. So it's not over, but the emergency declaration part of it is.
Thanks, Jenny Carroll. And I want to go to Dorotha Ferraro, because I want to find out if South Peninsula Hospital's question and contact number 235-0235 is still in operation, and if you plan to continue that.
235-0235 is still the way to reach the COVID desk and talk to a COVID nurse and make an appointment for a vaccine or get pre-registered to come and get a test or any of the above. So that group is still there, working 7 days a week, 9 to 6, but vaccines only 9 to 5. We have Moderna, Pfizer, and Janssen. Moderna is only offered on Fridays, but Janssen and Pfizer are offered 7 days a week. So we're here and I'm still working. I mean, we're still doing plenty of vaccines every week and lots of testing daily. So that service is still there. I just want to give a quick perspective story. Yesterday, the residents in our long-term care nursing home, they moved on, and they moved on in that they were doing some planning for future emergency events, and they did an evacuation drill, and they all evacuated the nursing home as a drill, as an exercise, out to a fun ice cream party in the sun.
Hey, so that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, it was really great. They had gone over a year without doing any other exercise drills for emergency response, because there's certainly other threats that, impact the community on a regular basis. So it was great for them to get to practice something different and get outside in the sunshine as well.
Thanks so much. And I hope Jenny Carroll from the City of Homer is taking notes, so that when the next set of drills come up and all of our, that we have an ice cream truck handy, because that sounds like exactly the right way to handle this.
I'm taking notes, Catherine.
Okay.
I'm taking notes.
So, and Nurse Lauren, do you have any final recommendations for this morning?
Oh, just one thing, maybe a set of comments about Jenny Carroll, the PIO with the city. Since we're so data focused, in appreciation of Jenny's contributions, I did a little bit of data mining and regarding communications with the city's PIO. And what I came up with is, in 2018, I received 8 emails from Jenny Carroll. And then in 2019, that increased to 9 emails received from Jenny. So this doesn't include face-to-face at Save You More, Zoom, or telephone. But in the years 2020 to 2021, that increased to 336 emails received from Jenny Carroll. So I just wanted to say thanks so much for Jenny's contributions. The World Health Organization declared COVID a global pandemic on March 11th of 2020. And my first email from Jenny regarding the pandemic was in January, almost 2 months before the pandemic. So thanks so much, Jenny, for everything.
Okay, anybody, last call, if anybody's got anything they want to add.
Ditto. Thank you, Jenny, for everything, and the city's entire PIO team and incident command team.
Thanks.
Yes, thanks. We couldn't do it alone here in this office, and we couldn't do it without our partners. So hopefully we'll carry this strength on as needed into the future. So thank you guys.
Thanks so much, Jenny. Stay in touch. That's Jenny Carroll, Information Officer for the City of Homer, Nurse Lauren Carroll, Public Health Nurse with the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, and Dorotha Ferraro, Spokesperson for South Peninsula Hospital. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. This has been your regular Thursday COVID Brief. The time is 9:35 a.m. I'll be back with a brief weather update, but it's time for the Jenny Carroll dance party. So roll up the rug.